We're good.
What's cracking, folks? Welcome back to Podcast Paroxysm. We have all new recording software today, so hopefully our audio issues will be worked out. I am Jared Dubin, and we've got Jordan White on the line once again. What's up, Jordan?
I hope this works.
It better work. We've been struggling pretty badly with our audio in the podcasts that we've done so far.
I think the number one comment on every Podcast Paroxysm and like either on HP or tweet that we get is you guys need to fix your microphones.
Yes. It's not even close. It's easily the biggest comment. I think it's the only comment we've gotten except for like, oh, that's fun. Do it again.
Right. Yeah.
But that's a little bit of a humble brag.
Yeah, very small one.
Anyway, we're going to start today talking about the Brooklyn Nets. They had a quiet summer, I'd say. Not too much moving around. Coming back with basically the same team, same coaching staff as last year.
Yeah, I don't know. They just had a pretty dull summer by their standards, I guess.
I mean, Keith Bogans is gone and they brought in Sean Livingston, but other than that, it's pretty much the same.
I can't really think of anything that happened.
PJ Carlesimo. but seriously, you know, Jason Kidd's the coach now. I think we all know that I'm not a big proponent of it mattering too much whether or not you have previous NBA head coaching experience. But Jason Kidd has no experience of coaching at any level. He was a player last year. Do you think that that could be not necessarily a problem for them, but could it cause some sort of issues at any point?
I think it's definitely going to cause issues. It's not going to be like an absolutely smooth transition. I actually think it's a good thing that he has those veterans, especially like KG, because I think those guys, obviously they know his accomplishments, or they know his success. And so they're going to listen to him. But at the same time, it's like, there's a difference between listening to the guy as a player and that guy suggesting what you do on the court versus the guy who was last year you were playing against him, and then this year he's telling you what to do on the court. So I have no problem believing that there's going to be some conflicts there. One thing that I do like is that they didn't just surround him with like know-nothing assistants. Like they gave him Lawrence Frank, who's a pretty decent coach. Even though he didn't play Drummond at all last year.
they have like 37 assistant coaches.
Which is probably maybe as many as they need. Like, Jason Kitts is a smart guy. He obviously understands the game. He was a terrific point guard. But whether he knows all that strategy from a coaching standpoint and, like, when to draw up play X or play Y or just those like substitution patterns, minutes, lineups, that stuff that Lawrence Frank and the other 36 assistants have experience with that they're going to help Kidd with. Now, whether or not he listens to them or whether there's going to be kind of that struggle between, you know, Frank thinking he knows best and Kidd overriding him for no reason, like, I think we're going to see definitely some rough patches along the way.
I think that there's so much talent on the roster that his ups and downs during the regular season and I guess his learning curve won't really matter much. I just think that the sheer amount of talent on the roster will overwhelm any sort of learning curve that he has. KG, even over the last few years, as he's been getting up there in age, has essentially been a top 10 defense by himself.
Yep.
If you have Garnett on your team, you're gonna be in the top 5 to 10 defensively. Now, you know, when he's not on the court, they could struggle, but they still have Kirilenko, who's a very strong defender. Pierce and Joe Johnson have over the last few years been pretty good defenders as well. It's not like they have a bunch of sieves and Garnett, you know.
No, obviously, that's true. And like, yeah, obviously the talent's gonna help a ton. And then that's what I'm saying. Like, it's also good that those veterans are there. It obviously it's going to ease the transition.
See, I don't think it matters so much that they're veterans. It matters that they're good.
No, but and that's what I mean. Like, sorry, I should say like good veterans, veterans who have had a lot of success, veterans who are former stars,
right? Like, and who are used Jason, to. If Jason Kidd had, you know, 39-year-old Jason Kidd, the player from last year on his team,
he would play all the time.
I would not think that would do much for his coaching prowess. But you know, also, KG and Paul Pierce are still playing at a very high level.
Well, also they've played with each other for a number of years already, and so I think that's going to help a ton too.
Well, it'll help them, but it's not like they've ever played, you know, with anybody else on the team.
No, but it's still like it's not like you're getting two very good veterans and putting them on the same, like from who came from different teams and putting them on the same team. It's taking two guys who have already have that really good chemistry and guys who have been playing with each other for the past however many years and just kind of, you know, sending them a few hours down the road.
Yeah, it should be pretty entertaining having. I mean, I thought at least if the Celtics traded Paul Pierce, it'd be like out of my life forever.
You know? Nope.
Like I would never have to deal with him again. And of course, like he gets traded to the Nets. It's just like I can't get rid of this guy.
You really can't. I think he's just going to haunt you forever.
God doesn't want me to get rid of Paul Pierce.
When he retires in 2 years, and then Woodson leaves the Knicks, you know who's going to be the next head coach of the Knicks, right?
No, we're going to sign Paul Pierce in 2 years when he's 41 and can't move.
Oh, never mind. And wait, you're going to sign him or are you going to trade for him, maybe giving up another first-round pick?
Trade a first-round pick for him. Veteran leadership. And we'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so obviously the Nets, I mean, we've been talking about it already, but the Nets made a big trade for Garnett, Pierce, and Jason Terry. They gave up, honestly, what amounts to nothing in terms of players.
They gave up poop.
They got rid of the Gerald Wallace contract in the deal. It's a financial coup for them. Like, yes, their payroll is skyrockets over the next 2 years or so, but that extra year of not having to pay Gerald Wallace $10 million is fantastic.
That was a bad contract. It was a terrible contract.
It was a horrible contract, and it just makes the fact that they traded away the sixth pick in the draft for it look even worse. But, you know, they did give up three future first-round picks in the deal. You know, I was asked for one of the five-on-fives, we did it yesterday on ESPN, you know, what grade you'd give the Nets offseason. So I already gave mine, I gave them an A-. What would you give them just for that trade alone?
Just for that trade alone, I think I'd actually go just slightly lower with a B+, because I'm usually not a big fan of mortgaging your future. That being said, I think that's splitting hairs. It's, you know, it still puts him in contention. It's an obvious upgrade over last year, but I still do think that it's obviously very much a win now mode. But again, I just don't like giving up that much of your future for these 2 years. And it's not like these guys are in perfect health. Like, even though KG, as he's gotten up in age, is still a tremendous defender, like, he's also getting up there in age. So is Paul Pierce. They're noticeably slower. And, yeah, so it's not like it's a guaranteed championship just with these aging stars.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, I'm, you know, repeatedly on record as not liking giving up first-round picks in trades at all. But I still think that, you know, for the place this team is in, I like it better than most deals where you give up first round picks.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they shave so much off their future salary cap. And because the guys they got and what that, like, how they fit the needs of the team. Like, the
right.
Team, you know, what didn't have very good spacing and they weren't good on defense. And what they did was they got longer, they got better on defense with KG, They got better shooting with both KG Pierce and with all three of KG Pierce and Terry replacing the Brooks Wallace Humphreys trio. Their spacing on offense, even though they were a good offensive team last year, their spacing on offense is going to be worlds better with those guys out there, and their defense is going to be better, and they saved money. Like,
right, it's
that's
not...
why I'm not really so much okay with giving up three future first round picks. I still think it's bad that they did that, but the return they're getting is much better than other teams who have given up first round picks for other things. Let's just say that for now.
Which we'll touch on in a second.
Yes.
So we covered that trade, I think, pretty in depth. What do you think of the Andrei Kirilenko signing?
If we take out the fact of who signed him, that was my favorite signing of the summer. That's the best value free agent that anybody signed.
It's ridiculous value.
Plus, what I love about Kirilenko is he's going to be kind of their swing guy between small and big lineups,
mm-hmm.
depending on who and how many of Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, KG, and Brook Lopez he plays with. Like, if he plays with KG and Brook and he's playing the three, then, you know, that's a big lineup that's going to be really strong on defense with him and KG out there. If he's playing with, you know, just KG and he's playing the four, then it's a small lineup that's still going to be strong on defense. If he's playing with just Brook, it's a small lineup, probably be a little bit, it's not that they'll be stronger on offense, but it's a little bit more versatile just because Kirilenko can do some things, passing the ball and operating, you know, making cuts. KG is more of a standstill shooter at this stage of his career. Kirilenko is still, you know, making cuts, and he can pass the ball. I mean, KG can pass the ball too, but Kirilenko is a different kind of passer. And, you know, you'll still be able to have that wing spacing with Pierce and Joe Johnson. So you can play him with any combination of those four guys, and it'll, you know, however you jigger it out, will decide whether it's a big or small lineup, and that's going to be really key for them.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a great signing. Obviously, there was some speculation as to, well, whatever, we're not going to go into it.
Why not? Well, I think we should absolutely go into it. Provo put a gun to his head and said,
no. I don't think he put a gun to it. I think he did more.
He made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Right. Yeah. He did the carrot more than the
stick. He put a gun to his head. He said either your brains or your signature is going to wind up on this paper. And if you don't know that that's a Godfather line, like, just come on, get out of here.
One other signing that the Nets made, and I just like this just because you have to feel good for the guy, Sean Livingston.
Yes, love it.
It's not
I mean, about Sean Livingston, not this season, the season before, is one of my favorite things I've ever written.
That you wrote?
Yeah.
It's only a one-year contract, like $1.1 million, but still, like, it's tremendous. Like, I like seeing him succeed.
I like that he's finally going to be on a good team.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, not just, you know, on the Cavaliers or the Bobcats.
Or the Bucks or that terrible Clippers team. Or actually, they weren't terrible. There was one year, got hurt, they were in the playoffs. And he played pretty well in the playoffs.
That was
kind of his coming out party. People were like, oh, yeah, well, now we know why this guy was the third pick in the draft.
Yep. And then...
Or was he third or was he fifth?
Third or fifth, one of the two. I don't know. But yeah, I just that was terrific.
I was wrong. He was fourth.
He was fourth. So neither. Anything else on the Nets?
Yeah, I mean, they still have like their backup bigs now are guys that were starting for them last year. Blotch and Reggie Evans are, you know, full-time backups now. Those guys started a bunch of games last season. So I think it's going to be a very bad backup game defensive pairing.
Really bad.
Offensively, it should work fine. You know, Reggie Evans is a good rebounder. Blotch has a little bit of a jumper, provided he can be the guy he was last year, not the guy he was in Washington. But I feel like if you play them with Kirilenko, or if you just play one of them at a time with KG, like if you mix and match and don't play those guys together all that much, it'll work out really well. I mean, what do you think about Jason Terry? He kind of was terrible for Boston for most of the year last year.
He was pretty terrible, I think.
Do you think he has a resurgence, or is he done, or what do you think?
I'm not going to call it a resurgence. I think he's a little better than he was last year, just because it's kind of hard to be that bad 2 years in a row. But you're not going to see, like, a resurgence like Mavericks era Terry. I don't think so.
I just think he's not... It's not that he's not that important to this team, but anything they get from him is going to be kind of it's icing on the cake.
Yeah. I completely
agree. Like they have their top six guys, and I guess he's their primary backup guard. Like he'll play some point and some two.
Yeah,
or is it like Alan Anderson? Like
they're backup. Yeah,
I think he's their primary backup guard.
Yeah,
actually, now that he's their third guard, so I guess he is going to be kind of important to them. But I still feel like anything they get from him that's above average level play is like, wow, that's fantastic. Thank you.
I'm one thing I actually really want to see, and this has nothing to do with Jason Terry, or something I'm just like excited to see because we're going to see it a lot, is the Garnett Lopez dynamic. We talked about, you know, Garnett's a really good passer, so I wonder if they're going to try and implement the high low game with Garnett and Lopez. If they work their things out, I think that could be a really fun pairing.
I agree. And you know what I'm excited for? I mean, they did this a bunch last year with Duran and Joe Johnson. I like their guard pick and rolls. I mean, yeah. I hope Kidd keeps that around. That was a part of the offense when he was in Dallas with him and Jason Terry, who was also there. Jason Terry sets really good screens. And he's very good at slipping screens, especially. So I think that they could use... I mean, him, Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, they all set good screens. So I think it could be interesting to see how they utilize that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Plumlee pick? Do you like him?
I don't know. Like I saw him at Summer League, and I mean he was fine.
Let's couch this as we always do. Summer League.
We have the caveat. It's out there. When he's just kind of being that garbage man, just that high activity level guy. Yeah, okay, he's fine. When you ask him to do anything, like put the ball on the floor or dribble, it gets really bad really fast. There were a few times where he tried to, like, run the break, and it never worked out well. But I don't know. I think he actually could turn into, you know, like, a decent rotation player if, you know, Garnett doesn't break his soul.
I mean, there's no pressure on him to do anything in the next year or two. All he's got to do is, like, follow KG and Kirilenko around and just, you know, soak up everything he possibly can. That's all he should be doing. Well, I mean, he should avoid Andre Blatch at all costs, probably. But all he's got to do is just learn. That's really all he should be doing the next 2 years, unless somebody gets hurt, in which case he'll be pressed into action, probably a little bit too early.
Yeah.
But if all he does is learn to play, you know, if they're going to keep the Celtics' principles on defense, which I'd assume they are, like that's why you bring KG and Pierce over, all he's got to do is learn how to play that strong side overload defense in the next couple of years, and that'll be fantastic for his development. He's already such a good athlete that he should be able to do some things no matter what, but if he learns to play really good defense, then that'll be a big help.
Yeah.
Let's move on. To
This is what we've been waiting for, folks.
This is what we've all been waiting for, I know. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the New York Knicks, who had a fantastic summer. Met a world peace. Ron Artest signed both of them. Beno Udre. I love it. Love it.
Really? Is there something else you're forgetting?
Glenn Grunwald got fired-ish.
No, he's an advisor now.
Right, he's an advisor. Everybody that gets named an advisor for the Knicks always sticks around and actually becomes an advisor. It's not... I mean, I'm not going to say anything.
Is that like the death knell, like...
It's title been used of... before to kind of pay guys to go away. I mean, Donnie Walsh was transitioned to an advisor role after he was kind of let go in favor of Grunwald. So, I mean, I think we know what's happening here. Steve Mills is in charge now. Grunwald's not going to have much say, if any, at all. I would assume none at all.
Well, no, I didn't just mean for the Knicks. I meant like anytime you hear a former front office or former coach go into the advisor role. Like,
oh, I mean, Doug Collins is an advisor to Sam Hinkie. I bet that they get along very well. Talk all the time, and they have very similar ideas. They have very similar ideas. Everybody knows that Collins and Hink think about the game the exact same way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that that's a beautiful relationship between two consenting adults. Anyway,
I really want to pitch NBA TV on a sitcom with Hinkie and Doug Collins, because I think that would just be comedy gold.
I'm gonna leave that one alone. So we teased this a little bit in the last podcast. I came up with a wonderful way to, if you're feeling down on the Knicks draft pick of Tim Hardaway Jr.,
he hit the game winner last night.
He did make a game winning shot in his first game as a Knick preseason game. I came up with a great way to feel better about the pick if you didn't like it on draft night. All you have to do is erase the year 2011-2012 from existence. And then look at his college numbers and you'll see that it's fantastic. Is this a guy that was a good shooter, got to the free throw line a little bit, got a little bit of rebounds, did some things. Unless, just like I said, you just get rid of 2011-12 when he shot 28% from three.
So, yeah, let's just get rid of that year then.
Yeah, that's my plan. I'm just going to pretend it never happened. And, you know, I'm very excited for the Tim Hardaway era. I'm going to pretend that he's not related to the other Tim Hardaway. I'm doing a lot of pretending when it comes to Tim Hardaway Jr. I think he's a perfectly fine player. There are just guys I would have rather had at the same spot, including the guy who was drafted immediately after him, who does the same things as Hardaway does, but better, but isn't named Tim Hardaway. That's basically what that comes down to there.
I really can't wait to just have this season unfold and see you just absolutely fall in love with Tim Hardaway Jr.
I'm already in love. I told you. All you have to do is pretend that the 2011-12 season happened.
It's entire season's worth of data and evidence doesn't exist.
And just to transition to where we're going next, that's what Knicks fans are doing with Bargnani. They're pretending the last three seasons never happened.
Really? Because I would take like What was Bargnani? I think it was like two seasons ago, where like pre-injury, like just before he was like making a legitimate All-Star case.
It was definitely not two seasons ago.
I thought it was like two. It was two or three seasons ago.
I think it was four seasons ago, because over the last 3 years, he's shot 32 points, and I know this by heart just because I've worked it so many times. I don't even have to look it up. He's shot 32.3% from three over the last three seasons combined. Which, by the way, 32.3% is not good. Just in case you're, you know, wondering about that, it's not good.
It's not good. Okay. Well, thanks for putting that up.
If you go the last 5 years, he's gone 41, 37, 35, 30, 31 from three. Okay. So, just so we're all clear on how things work, the higher the number is, the better.
Oh man, I can just tell right now how much you're holding back. Like even now, your hatred is you're like a. It's just like a dam, and it's very close to bursting.
Well, I'm gonna do this as calmly as possible.
Okay, all right.
I'm gonna give I've given extended thoughts already, but not in podcast form. So let's just throw this out there. No, the Knicks did not give up good players for Andrea Bargnani. Steve Novak, very good shooter, but was generally useless on the floor for anything else, and the Knicks just did not seem to either want or know how to deploy him last year. They kind of just had him stand out there, and every once in a while they'd run a play for him, but he wasn't nearly as much of a weapon under Woodson as he was under Mike D'Antoni. I think that much is clear. So neither of those two guys, him or Marcus Camby, were going to make much of a difference for the Knicks this year. And, you know, sure, Bargnani is more talented than both of them, but if you're a team that was third in the league in offensive efficiency last year and was 18th in defense and in the lower half of the league in rebounding, even though you were in the top half of the league in defensive rebounding, which is really, you know, the more important rebounding side of the ball, I don't see how trading for an all-offense, no-defense, jump-shooting big man who rebounded worse than Iman Shumpert last season solves any of your problems in any way whatsoever, especially when you have to pay that guy. Hang on, let me get the exact number for Bargnani over the next couple of seasons.
It might make
it's, you drink. $23.36 million over the next two seasons. Not only did you trade for all that money, and you know what? Yes, you shaved Steve Novak's $3.75 million off the cap in 2015 by making that move. So you take on Bargnani's $23 million, but you also give up three draft picks. Now, here's the two responses that people have been saying to that. Yes, you cleared the Steve Novak's $3.75 million off the books for the 2015 summer, so you can go free agent shopping. Well, guess what? They gave it back right away to J.R. Smith. So that's null. Doesn't matter anymore. The money you cleared, it's already gone. And more to J.R. Smith. So don't even talk to me. Second of all, okay, so late first round picks don't often turn into anything. That's the next thing. And then second round picks don't matter. That's the next thing. So yes, late round picks don't often turn into anything. That's exactly why you need to give yourself as many, or give your team as many chances as possible to hit on one of those late round picks, especially if you expect to be a good team. Especially when you're a team that is going for kind of a stars and minimum salary distribution on your roster, you need cost-controlled young assets to be able to develop into the future. If you trade away all your picks, you can't can't do that. The only guy on this team right now, there's two guys on the team that are under 27 years old. It's Iman Shumpert and Tim Hardaway. Or I guess CJ Leslie, if he makes the team, is also under 27.
And Torrey Murray, if he makes the team.
And Torrey Murray, if he makes the team, and Jeremy Tyler, if he makes the team. But well, I think that I would expect only one of those three guys to make the team. I'd say Leslie's going to make the team. I really don't think that Murray's going to make it. They already have 3 point guards, and they're going to want to keep Cole Aldrich in my opinion, just because they seem to want a backup big man. Which leads me to my next point on Bargnani. He, like Amari Stoudemire, like Kenyon Martin, like Ron Artest, plays the same position that Carmelo Anthony, your best player, should be playing, which we basically proved the entire season last year when he had his best season of his career playing power forward, where the Knicks had an extraordinarily efficient offense playing him and Tyson in the front court with three shooters surrounding them. It's just everything about this trade moves you into a non-optimal position, unless he miraculously goes back to shooting, you know, 37 to 40% from three, like he was doing 4 and 5 years ago. By the way, 4 and 5 years ago, not any time in the recent past. So those are my thoughts. I have more, but I'm honestly just too burnt out on the topic to even go too much deeper into it. You know, there are some people out there that have said, oh, Bargnani helps the mid-range game. Well, first of all, you don't want to take that many mid-range jump shots. Adding a guy who takes more mid-range jump shots when Carmelo already, like, leads the planet in mid-range jump shots isn't ideal. Second of all, the Knicks were a good mid-range shooting team last year anyway. It's not like they needed help there. And, I mean, yeah. And, oh, then there's the, well, he's a very good pick-and-pop player. So, and the Knicks didn't have anyone who could do that last year. My answer is Carmelo Anthony can do that. They just never ran it for him because he doesn't like to set picks. Like, just tell the guy to set picks and slip some screens. He's been good at it for the last three seasons. And over a sample size of like 150 or so plays, they just never run it for him. It's whatever. I mean, I can't do it anymore. What are your thoughts on the Knicks?
Wow. That was impressive, Jared.
I kind of blacked out there for a second. What happened?
I don't even know if I can say anything else.
I think you have to.
I don't know if I can. That's the thing. Like that was genius, really. I echo all of your concerns. The one thing that really baffled me there are a lot of things that baffled me with this Bargnani thing, but just given how much success we saw last year with Melo playing the four spot, just how good he was, like, why would you want to shy away from that? Why would you want to go to more traditional? Now, they could still play him at that spot with Bargnani, but get him the ball.
Oh, this is my other thing before you keep going. Oh, everyone's like, oh, well, if you play him and Bargnani together, then Melo's still playing the four and Bargnani is really playing the three on offense. Well, there's another side for the ball. And like Carmelo, we've seen over the last, you know, number of years, he is much better guarding players in the post than he is chasing guys around the perimeter. It's just like night and day in terms of his ability to guard one kind of player versus the other. And Bargnani can't guard either of those kind of players. So I think that it becomes a concern on that side of the ball for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I really don't have anything else on that trade.
Do you have anything else on the Knicks or their summer or anything?
There is one thing I think that is really intriguing going forward, and Matt raised this question on Twitter. He also asked in the HP thread, and I think someone's going to have something on it soon. Iman Shumpert or Jimmy Butler?
This question, like, I told Matt today. I was like, what are you doing to me? It's like, you know, I have things to do. you're taking over my life. It's just too close to my heart.
Oh, I'm sure. But, no, actually, like, but on Iman, like, I'm really interested to see how he develops this year. Like, he's going to be fully healthy this year.
Oh, speaking of, you know, his development, I came up with a new rule for preseason.
Oh, yeah.
Preseason doesn't matter except when Iman Shumpert plays really well, goes 7-for-7 for 18 points tonight. Just everything matters then.
That's what I was going to say. So, like, because, like, he's looked a lot better as a jump shooter.
I mean, he was knocking down jumpers off the dribble, which has been kind of his biggest, at least offensively. Or actually, shouldn't say his biggest. Actually, not just jumpers, basically anything off the dribble, whether it's near the rim or taking jumpers. He has struggled mightily to finish in his 2 years so far. But he looked very good doing both in the preseason game. That doesn't matter, except it totally does.
No, but I'm really interested to see how Iman develops, because I don't know. For some reason, I don't think of him as that wing 3-and-D type guy, simply because he plays the 2 a lot. Like, even though Jimmy Butler plays the 2 a lot. And I know positions don't matter, but whatever. I don't know, he just doesn't seem like that type of player. He always seems like more, like he's got more skills than just that. Like, he's improved his handles.
He flashes more, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, both distributing ability and ability to
create offense.
Right. The creating is where it really comes from, but he flashes more, but it's just not consistently yet. And, you know, obviously if he expands his game this year, fantastic, I'd love it. But I do think that, you know, his ultimate, I mean, I hope that for more, but even if ultimately he becomes, you know, an elite 3-and-D guy, which is what he was, you know, after his first month or so last year, then that's terrific. If you get that with, I think he was the 17th pick in the first round,
I don't know.
That's fantastic. Like, that's just terrific value. And I just love him so much. He's, oh God, he's my favorite. He really is. Everything about him is the best. Like, he just makes me smile.
I can hear the smile. Like, just, I can hear
it's,
it.
I can tell my smile is coming through. It's like leaping out of me. He's just the best. Like, he's Shump. Like, when you're on a team with Rasheed Wallace and you are a second-year player that's injured and they're still letting you do the pre-game hype-up circle routine, that's how you know that you're the man.
What do you think, if you think anything at all, about the Udrich signing, the Beno Udrich signing?
I loved it. For the minimum, that's a steal.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Because he played pretty well last year when he had the opportunity to. And, I mean, he's not going to come in.
I mean, my thing is it allows them to go back to playing
two point guards
together, which, again, I mean, I tweeted it out maybe a couple weeks ago. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But, I mean, the Knicks' numbers when they were playing two point guards together and Carmelo at the four, they outscored their opponents by something like 10 points per 100 possessions when they had that configuration. And with all other configurations, they outscored their opponents by like 1 or 2 points per 100 possessions. It's just so clear how they should be playing, how they need to play. It's so blatantly obvious that what needs to happen in terms of lineup configurations, at least for as much time as you can do it. Yeah, those are my thoughts. But I mean, Udra for the minimum is just—it's a great deal.
It's
a solid lead guard. He can play with Felton. He can play with Prigioni, or he can, you know, play by himself if need be, as, you know, the only point guard on the court, which I'm sure will happen because
Felton or Priggs are going to get hurt.
Felton or Priggs will get hurt, and Woodson doesn't. I mean, well, he has been starting. Or he did start in the first preseason game, the two point guards together. But, I mean, he's expressed preference for playing traditional lineups. Let's put it that way, I guess.
Yeah.
A strong preference for playing traditional lineups. He basically avoided playing small with 2 point guards like the plague whenever it was possible last season.
You were clamoring for it in the playoffs too, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, Prigioni and Copeland were only like two of the four best players on the team in the playoffs, and these guys couldn't get on the court. But I wasn't really digressing. That's like my only point here.
So should we move on?
No. I think that Udra, Ron Artest, and Kenya Martin for under $5 million for the season. I think Glenn Grunwald did a great job getting those guys. So, of course, you know, he had to go.
No. You're looking at it all wrong, Jared.
You can't stick around when you're making value signings like that. It just, you know, it ruins morale.
Enough of this negative Nancy outlook. I think you're just looking at this wrong. It's not that, you know, he did a good job, but, you know, now we're going to show him the door. It's, you know, he did a good job, and as a reward for his services, they're going to, you know, they're going to lighten the load from him.
Right. You're absolutely right. He doesn't need to be the general manager anymore.
No, they're going to...
It's much easier on his mind and his body
to be an advisor.
You know?
He did the hard work, Jared. Let him reap his reward.
I think you're right. You know what? I think you're right. He's earned it, and yeah, he's earned that place.
You've earned it, Mr. Grunwald.
But I mean, yeah. So, the Artest thing is kind of, I think it's similar, but on a somewhat of a lower level to the Kirilenko signing, just because who he plays with. Will determine whether the Knicks are big or small, and he can guard some of the guys that, you know, Melo, it's basically like he doesn't want to cover them. Like, he doesn't want to guard power forwards is essentially what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, why the Knicks aren't going to play small like they should be. But, you know, Ron can help with that, so that's good. And I like that signing a lot. Plus, he's just so entertaining already. Like, it's having Ron Artest, Kenyon Martin, J.R. Smith on the same team. Plus, like, Schumpert is a character in his own right as well. I mean, plus Pablo is just so delightful to have on your team too. Like, it's still so fun. Although what I'm thinking is this team is better than the team that the Knicks put out there last year. I don't think there's even really a question about that. It's deeper and it's more talented. But I think because of how much better the East got and because of how the Knicks team last year was tied to playing a certain way and shooting well from three and 46.2% of their threes left the team, I think it's entirely possible that they are a better team this year and finish with a worse record.
I agree with you, and we actually kind of talked about this a little bit in the preview. Yeah, it's unfortunate that this is their best team, but like, and that they probably won't do as well, just because, again, that talent and the better teams in the East now. But hey, at least it's worse, so you can, you know, beat them again, I guess.
Definitely can, and in Tank City.
No, they're not tanking. They've been very adamant that they're not tanking.
They're not tanking. Nobody's tanking.
Nobody's
tanking. The
Celtics
aren't tanking. The Sixers aren't tanking. Let's go to a team. Let's move on from the Knicks. I think that we've all had enough of me.
I think so too.
Let's go to a team that's definitely not tanking. The Miami Heat. Our NBA champs. Still got LeBron. Still got Wade, still got Bosch, still got Ray Allen, Rio, Norris Cole. They're bringing back the same team, essentially, except they swapped out Mike Miller and they got Michael Beasley. And they have Greg Oden now as well. I mean,
yeah, I'm really excited for Greg Oden to take the court again.
You know, those are obviously low risk, high reward signings potentially.
Right.
In all likelihood, neither one of them is going to do much. But if they do, then, you know, bully for you. Fantastic. Wonderful.
Do you think Beasley even makes the team?
Yeah, I think he makes the team. Do you not think he makes the team?
I don't think he makes the team, really.
I think he makes it on name recognition.
I don't think that he cares that much about name recognition.
I think every team cares about it, and that's why all these guys that are, like, super old and not that good anymore always, like, keep getting jobs.
I just don't think that's why
Jason Kidd had a 3-year contract last year, because his name was Jason Kidd.
Yeah, but, like, the Heat... Like, why would the Heat give a shit? They have Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade. Like, they're fine with names. Although, I mean, hey, tonight Beasley scored 9 points in 9 minutes. So, there's that.
Yeah, that's 36 points for 36 minutes.
That's a really sustainable number, too.
I think it's absolutely sustainable. Everybody knows the preseason is entirely predictable. Of the regular season, everything that happens in the preseason always carries over to the regular season, especially when it has to do with Iman Shumpert being awesome.
Will Bynum had 28 points tonight, so that's, yeah, definitely.
Well, let's you know, actually talk about the Heat.
Okay, let's talk about the Heat.
They're so good. Like, it's just
not. They're terrifyingly good. Like, that's the best way to describe it.
Do you think that they need to at all change up that like, their defense is so aggressive, and it's...
I don't think they need to change it at all, because they've...
It's not, you know, tactically that I think it's flawed. It's just that it's so taxing on, especially on LeBron and Bosh, in terms of blitzing ball handlers on pick and rolls, and you just see guys wear down over the course of the season. They've dealt with injuries the last few years. The system is so taxing on these guys. I wouldn't say that they need to change it necessarily, but I mean, it definitely drove them last year to play big more. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't always Bosh or always LeBron blitzing the pick and roll. You know, it was Haslam, and it was Anderson, and it was Joel Anthony. And, you know, now they have even more guys to do that. I think that we see them in the regular season go big even more often than they did last year, so that they're able to, when they need to, in the playoffs, go small.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think you'll see it a lot, like, not necessarily what the Spurs do, because the Spurs still keep their same system during the regular season. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of hold back and, like you're saying, like, go more traditional, go big in the regular season. Not like for huge expanses of time, but, you know, enough so that it keeps the others well rested for the playoffs. Like, if they get the 1 or the 2 seed, as they're going to get a top 3 seed in the East, like, regardless. But yeah, I mean, and Spoelstra's an incredibly smart and incredibly good coach, and he's going to realize that, you know, as his stars get older, especially with Dwayne Wade continuously being plagued by knee issues, he'll probably start actively managing minutes more. But at the same time, like, I don't think you're going to see him tone it down any when those guys are in.
Speaking of Spoelstra, first of all, I'm glad you said that he's such a good coach. I mean, the people that say, oh, anybody could coach that Heat team, Spoelstra's not a good coach. Like,
it's complete bullshit. First of all,
those people are nuts. Like, look at the way that team played offense last year and how much different it was from the offense they had 2 years ago when they first signed all these guys. This is a guy that tailored a specific system exactly to the personnel he has on his team, and it is beautiful to watch. Absolutely beautiful.
Right. That's second what I love all, about.
Go ahead.
No, I actually forgot what I was going to say when you interrupted me. So okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, like, you know, we never. This is one thing that's always fascinated me about the game, and something that I really want to explore more is, you know, the evolution of coaches. And you know, we always hear, whether it's cliche or not, from players like what they worked on over the summer. It's like, I added 15 pounds of muscle, or I worked on my jump shot, or you're going to see me, you know, finish at the rim better. Like, you know, and some of it's true. Like, you know, when LeBron worked on his pips. Or when like Hibbert worked with Tim Duncan, like we hear a lot about how players try and improve in the offseason and how they work. We never hear that much about coaches. Actually, one of the few times where we heard a lot about you know, what a coach tries to do in the offseason is when Spoelstra went and met with Chip Kelly when he was at Oregon to kind of see how, pick his brain about the spread offense, and he took that and implemented it into the Heat's offense. Which is really cool. But just to be able to see how Spoelstra's grown as a tactician, as a guy, as a game manager overall, has been a joy to watch. And it's something that, because he has these three stars and because he has the best player in the world, it gets overlooked by a tremendous degree.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100% on all of that.
Yeah, I don't.
There's not really much. It's not a lot. It's crazy, but there's just not much more to say about the Heat. Like,
well, there's one.
We
thing.
Know they're going to be there at the end of the season as, you know, a top. Even if they don't get the number one seed in the East, which, I mean, they've got as good a chance as anyone else to do that. Even if they don't get that number one seed, they're still going to be really good.
They're still
and they've got as good a shot as anybody else at getting it. So they're going to be right there, and I mean, they're clearly the best team in the East, head and shoulders above anybody else.
What do you think we see from Wade this year? Do you think we see? It's kind of a Spursian question, like, is this where, like, those injuries and everything, kind of what we saw in the playoffs, actually catch up to him, or was that just like a thing where it was like, you know, that's just the playoffs, he had a summer of rest, he's going to be back to being Dwayne Wade? What do you think?
I think it's somewhat of a combination of both. I think that, you know, he's clearly not going to be peak Dwayne Wade, but it's not like he's going to be some scrub. Like, he's still good. They're going to need to manage his minutes. They're going to need to manage his starts. But, I mean, Spo will find a way to do it. He knows what he's doing. I think that, like, they should do it, and they should just take the fives from the league. Doesn't matter. They should rest these guys for game, like, games at a time. Like, and I think that more teams should do that. Like,
the way Pop was
doing it last year, like, it's just smart. It's not only is it smart in terms of, like, this is a team that they know they're going to the playoffs and they need these guys to be healthy at the end of the year. But it's smart business. Like, these guys are commodity, very much commodities to the team. If they get hurt, they're not worth as much. You got to keep these guys healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't disagree at all. Unfortunately, I think the league disagrees. And
the league absolutely disagrees. They have every reason to disagree, because the league's commodity is their TV products.
Yep, and their, you know, merchandise and their, like, ticket sales, everything like that. But yeah, their commodity is these players. But that's whatever, whole other thing. I don't really have much more on the Heat. They're fucking good. They're going to be fucking good, and they're going to...
We know they're going to be there.
We know they're going to be there.
At the end of the season. Like,
and LeBron's going to have another amazing season.
I think it's pretty well established that LeBron's pretty good basketball.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go with the same question about these three. Or, well, we won't include the Heat, Which of the Knicks and Nets do you think is more likely to finish outside the top four in the East?
I'm going to go with, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to go with the Knicks here.
I have them in my preseason predictions. I had them finishing 4-5. So I think it's about an equal chance. You know, the Nets because of injuries and the Knicks because of not playing the way they should. I think they have pretty much an equal chance to finish outside the top four. I mean, I think one of them gets the four and one of them gets the five. So I just don't know which is which.
Yeah, the East is, it's just weird to think of the East being surprisingly strong this year, given how weak it's been in the past.
The East, I think, you know, as we discussed, and that's why we divided up the podcast this way, there's a clear top, I'd say there's a clear top five, and then the Hawks are six, and then there's a group of teams that are basically 7-10 that will be fighting for those two spots.
Right.
That's, it's Washington, Cleveland, Detroit, and I mean, some people put Toronto in there. I don't necessarily see it, but I guess theoretically they could be. But I think that that's how the East shakes out. You know, it'll be Miami, and then it'll be Indiana and Chicago, and then it'll be the Knicks and Nets, and then it'll be Atlanta, and then it's two of those three or four teams. I think that that's how it shakes out.
Yep. And I mean, that's what we've said.
Yep, that's kind of the way it went. But we have now officially gone through all 30 teams, so we're going to have to find other topics for podcasts. If any readers, commenters, listeners, whatever, have any ideas, drop them in the comments section along with your complaints about our audio.
Hopefully there won't be any this time.
All right, good stuff.
All right. Thanks, Jared.
Thank you.